This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Are you there, Sam?
Yep, hang on, I'm just turning that on.
Is our guest ready?
Yep, I've got the music ready.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep, sounds great.
Cool. Otago Access Radio, in partnership with Otago Polytechnic, brings you Blowing Bubbles.
Blowing Bubbles brings you positive conversations with people in their bubbles around the world.
We're curious about how people are finding new ways of life, being and problem solving. Every Wednesday, the Sustainable Lens team of Samuel Mann and Mawira Karatai reach out from our bubbles to chat with interesting and positive people around the world.
Broadcast on Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM in Dunedin, and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz.
Bringing joy, connection, kindness and peace in all the days ahead.
Welcome to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. I'm Samuel Mann and I am joined by Mawira Karatai. Kia ora, Mawira.
Kia ora, Sam. How's it going?
It's going very well indeed. We haven't spoken since you went on your trip to Christchurch.
Oh, the National Mountain Bike, the secondary school's Mountain Biking Nationals. We took 12 boys from Whakatane High School into this unbelievably intense competition, and they held their own, so I'm feeling very proud and still very exhausted. It was a big drive.
And and a week away with 12 boys. 14-year-olds.
Yeah, between 14 and 16, and oh, the chaos. But and man, can those kids eat. Holy guacamole. I did a lot of cooking.
Your sausage cooking would have gotten a real workout.
Yeah. It really did. We cooked sausages everywhere.
And we are back to Coming Up for Air. Tell us about Coming Up for Air.
So Coming Up for Air started at the beginning of this year with the online cohort from the Masters of Sustainable Business students at the University of Otago, where we introduced a podcast as one of their outputs. And so it was very popular. And so we've now included it for this in-person cohort. So our guest today is the first of this whole group of amazing young people who are doing great work out in the world.
And who are we introducing today then?
It is my absolute pleasure to introduce Xihao Shen. Welcome and thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, Mawira.
Xihao, a big part of the show is getting to know people. It's a show about you, really. So where did you grow up?
I spent most of my time growing up on the east coast of China.
What was that like?
Yeah. I mean, it's quite different compared to like Western countries. We got a huge population, 1.3 billion. And especially on the east coast, where like population density, which is probably the highest. And we also got like a lot of foreigners, quite a few. Like I went to like a international high school where I came across a lot of people from overseas. I mean, the teachers are from like all over the world, India, Africa, the US, the Great Britain, Europe and everywhere. That's it.
And what did you want to be when you grew up?
Probably be like someone who like can benefit the society. Yeah.
And so what did you do after school?
After school, I study like a diploma in tourism, and I did my bachelor in business, and now I'm studying a master of international business.
And so what led you to be doing some work and study in sustainable business?
It's just my personal interest. Either in New Zealand or China, like sustainability is becoming like more and more like a trending topic. With all these regulatory pressure, like the government or like those non-governmental organizations, it's just becoming more and more popular. And the organizations, they need to think about how to deal with this kind of pressure, and they need to consider like the society and the planet Earth. That's all.
Where did it come from for you personally? You said it was your personal interest. What was the spark that got you headed in that direction?
Probably like I've seen those documentaries and those videos on like social platform, and it's just becoming more and more popular like these days.
Can you remember what it was about those documentaries that got you interested? Because the reason for asking that is if we can figure out the thing that got people interested, what was that spark? Because then we can make sure that more of those sparks happen, because then we'll get the fire we need. So what was it about it?
Like I see those natural landscape of the planet Earth, and I don't want to be like damaged or destroyed by those industrial pollution. That's pretty much it.
What was the... I presume the word's not sustainability that you use in China, but is it the same concepts that we talk about here that you were taught at school?
No, it's like kind of different in China. In China, it's mostly like just the regulatory pressure from the government. Like, I mean, we're still pretty much like a developing country, so I mean, people, they don't have the awareness of social responsibility or like sustainability. It's like more still kind of backward.
If it's coming from a top down, if it's a government thing, how do they promote that? How do they sell that? What's the messaging like?
The Chinese government is extremely powerful. They can shut down any enterprises for not being, you know, socially responsible or sustainable. It's just the fact that it's going on at the moment. Yeah.
Let's take your music choice. Who have we got and why?
It's just like a song from the movie. I don't remember the name. I know the name in Chinese, but it's a great movie, and it's like if one day the environment of the Earth is like no longer like, how do you say, like suitable for people to live in, we have to probably find another planet, and that would be like really quite tricky. I mean, even with Elon Musk doing all these things, I mean, it still seems quite like unrealistic at the moment.
So this is Hans Zimmer with Cornfield Chase.
bubble sprite of the forest of Orokinui, Dunedin's favourite goddess, Tahu Mackenzie.
Tēnā tātou. I hope you're all having a lovely day. It's a beautiful sunshiny day here in Support Tobelo, where I'm staying with my beautiful whānau for the moment, and I'm enjoying gazing out over the sea. And for me, of course, the sea is our first home, and whenever we can reach her shores and listen to her song and her breath, we are truly blessed, we are truly renewed and returned to our most essential selves, in my view. And of course, all of us find this in different places. I'm fortunate to work outside and have for the last 20 years. I'm fortunate to be able to go into the forest and hear all the different birds, particularly the riro-riro at the moment, the grey warbler, and have spotted a few grey warbler, which is quite unusual. We often hear them, but don't see them. And part of my work at Orokonui has allowed me to invent and sell my bird feeders, my pekapeka bird feeders, and I speak with beautiful people all around Aotearoa about the birds that come to see them in their rohe. And it's fascinating to hear about the changes they've observed over the time that they have lived in places, and it might be 50 years, 30 years, 10 years, 5 weeks, but I hear all these observations. And how fortunate we are that we can share what we see, what we hear, what changes we perceive with one another, thanks to the beautiful, helpful technology which we have created as a species. The fact that I can record this now and my voice can be heard by you, wherever you are, and whatever's happening around you, is such a wonderful boon and encouragement to us as a species to see what our capacities are, to create things which help and nurture us, which allow us to grow and elevate our own skills and learning and gifts and share them. And ideally, my feeling is that our technologies are best placed to serve not only our own species, but, of course, first and foremost, the living world. The world which sustains us and gives us life, of which we are a part. And we are just the portiki, we are just the children on this earth. So when we are creating, in many ways it can be like we are crafting gifts for our mothers and fathers, grandmas and grandparents that have been here long before us, our ancestral forms that we have evolved through, all the other life forms. And I always enjoy going down to the pond with the tamariki at Orokonui and seeing the beautiful algae and talking about the algae making the first atmosphere for us, of course, billions of years ago, and how grateful we are and enjoying breathing and all the beautiful oxygen that surrounds us, and how pure and how sweet that air can be with the nectar from the flowers, the flowering trees. As a child, I lived in big cities in Europe, and it didn't suit me, as I had been born here and lived here for 7 years. So very fortunate to come back. And I know for all of us that we have a time and a place and a space that allows us to feel gratitude and allows us to feel that connection to all life. So I really hope for you that you're having the opportunity now, as it gets a bit warmer, to venture out and understand yourself as part of an infinite web of life and lineage of unique consciousness that permeates and connects all life. And I hope that this can be a comfort to you. I know that we've all been through so much change over the last several years, and we're having to adapt, we're having to evolve. And this is something as a species we're very good at. That's why there's so many of us and we're still here. So I hope that this process of evolution and adaptation is going well for you. And of course, being part of this show and hearing people's stories from all over the world is such a testament to our ability to adapt and evolve, bringing forth those beautiful skills of the inner nurturer that I value so strongly. So a big thank you to Sam and the whole Blowing Bubbles team and all of you for having me, and I'll talk with you again soon. Thanks so much. Ka kite.
You're listening to Blowing Bubbles. We're talking with Chihao Shen.
Chihao, your podcast was really interesting. What would you like the listeners to know about why you chose the person you interviewed, and what would you like them to listen for?
I chose this person. The funny thing is, a lot of people like rejected me because they're probably too busy. But the person that I chose, he's like a really respectable person. He gave me a lot of advice on the current situation of the livestocking and farming industry of New Zealand. He's from the organization called PAMU. Yeah.
What can you tell us about the organization?
It's like a farming organization. They have probably more than over 100 farms all over New Zealand. I think their major clients are like big companies like Fonterra or Silver Firm. Yeah.
Is there anything in particular that you'd like the listeners to listen out for? Is there an important message in there?
Oh, I think it's just the current situation of New Zealand farming industry, because New Zealand is like a country that heavily depend upon farming and agriculture, but the thing is, it's generating tons of carbon emission as well as other gas emissions compared to countries like the US and China. Although we do have we do produce tons of emissions from agriculture, but farming is not the primary industry of either China, US or whatever. So it's quite important. The message is quite important for Kiwis to understand the impact of agriculture. It's normally being overlooked because I think the Western media, they tend to exaggerate the carbon emissions from industrial activities or transport or whatever. I think it's just the current situation of New Zealand. Yeah.
Okay, let's go.
So, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Chihao Shen and I'm from China. My topic today is sustainability in New Zealand agriculture. So, in today's world, when we talk about carbon emissions, we normally look at emissions from transportation or from manufacturing and production, and the government or media is telling us to reduce our electricity use, recycle more, or buy electronic vehicles. But we as individuals, we normally overlook the impact of farming. In countries like New Zealand, Australia, or even Argentina, farming is one of the primary industries that contribute to economic growth, but it also contributes significantly to carbon emission. In New Zealand, farming activities account for nearly half of the greenhouse gas emissions, which is quite exaggerated. And the most interesting thing is the number of cattle in New Zealand is much bigger than its population. And that's why the most pressing problem for New Zealanders is to reduce emissions from agriculture other than emissions from industrial productions compared to countries like China. So firstly, I found a related article which is published on University of Chicago Press, which gives me an overview of the impact of farming in New Zealand and Australia. It generally discusses the impact of farming, including water quality, biodiversity, gas emissions, soil conservation, and what Australian and New Zealand governments have been doing to reduce the impact. According to the journal, in New Zealand, rapid expansion of dairy industry since the early 21st century owing to the increasing demand of foreign markets has been causing water pollution, which impact Lake Taupo and Lake Karapiro. Forgive me if I'm pronouncing it wrong. According to a report published on RNZ, the chemicals from fertilizers and excrement are discharging into the river system. Chemicals such as nitrogen are damaging the biodiversity of the river system. In fact, quite a few species are endangered owing to that. And from the journal, the other thing is greenhouse gas emissions from farming, especially methane, which is also known as CH4 in chemistry. And livestock is the biggest source of emissions, according to the Ministry of New Zealand, which is honestly quite shocking. So according to OECD, New Zealand government is committed to put a price on agricultural emissions. They were working with a bunch of stakeholders, such as industry experts, Maori agricultural organizations, and major industry players such as Fonterra. So they were planning to charge taxes on farming companies for methane and carbon dioxide emissions. But according to a recent news article published on Reuters, the new government, which is the National Party, just canceled this plan because of the concern of farmers. And you know, they're just politicians. They only care about votes. So they claim that they will look for other measures that will reduce gas emissions, such as technologies and innovations that can be applied to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. And they will put a lot of money into the R&D of these measures. So when it comes to this news article, I reckon it's not a complete failure, because the National Party is planning something else. But indeed, it's kind of disappointed that they prioritize interests over sustainability. Personally, I believe the government needs to work with one of the most important stakeholders, which are farmers. They need to convince the farmers on those sustainable measures that will reduce gas emissions. And they need to continuously communicate with them if they want to actually find a solution. And for water pollution, I found a news article published on a website called Greenpeace, which I guess it's some NGO. So the article says that Luxon's government has cancelled the protection of fresh water, which is just ridiculous, because that is saying major players of dairy and farming industries like Fonterra can continue polluting the river. And I don't hope one day that you need to boil the water before drinking it, just like what I used to do in China. Well, back in my country, it's not really safe to drink tap water, so we always have to boil it. And I truly don't hope it happens in New Zealand. So to conclude, sustainability in farming has not been effectively addressed. I believe it's a sort of wicked problem that involves multiple stakeholders and conflicting criteria, and it's probably gonna take generations to address it. So let's take a break here. I'm just gonna play some music for about a minute, and we'll get back on track. Welcome back, everybody. So I did the interview with Mr. Sam Bridgman from a company called PAMU, and I want to thank for his help. So PAMU is an organization producing meat and dairy products. They are managing hundreds of farms across
North and South Ireland. They have been taking several sustainable measures according to their report. So the first question is, how does your organization cope with pollution and environmental damage from farming or livestocking? So for his organization, they have initiated a sustainability plan focusing on seven areas: biodiversity, biosecurity, land and water care, animal health and welfare, people and belonging, climate change and collaboration. So the organization also aims to improve environmental benefits and reduce environmental impacts, as well as providing social benefits and impacts. And my next question is, what kind of solutions or strategies they've been implementing to reduce methane emissions? So according to the interview, generally they've been focusing on low methane genetics, and I did a bit of research afterwards because what he said is kind of not in my knowledge base. So PAMU is doing a genetics project. They've been trying to find out those cattle or sheep with specific genes that can reduce the methane emissions, so they can ensure this kind of DNA passed from one generation to the next. And according to a research published online, they found out that certain cattle with such type of gene is able to reduce the emissions from 15 to 20%. And the other thing they've been doing is they've been testing vaccine as well as feed additives. But he didn't specify on those innovations that could potentially decrease methane emissions. So I went down Google Scholar, and according to a research conducted in Spain, ruminants such as cattle generates large amounts of methane in their for stomach when they're digesting. And some researchers propose that using anti-methanogen vaccines that will be effective in reducing the methane emissions. But according to another research, they believe that these vaccines are only effective in short term. But all of these research were conducted a couple years ago. So I found a recent news article published on RNZ, and it says that researchers has been developing vaccines since 2007. It's really quite challenging owing to the complexity of the stomach of ruminants, which contains billions of microbes, and it comes with different size and shapes. And this news article also highlighted feed additives as one of the potential tool to reduce gas emissions, which is also mentioned in the interview. So according to the research, these feed additives are added into their daily food consumption, aiming to reduce methane emissions when they're digesting. So back in 2021, a company called Bovair just launched a new feed supplement, and it was approved for marketing in Brazil, and it's also approved in the US market by FDA. So I believe it's safe for the cattle. But the funny thing is, the researchers say that is not suitable for traditional outdoor livestocking in New Zealand. And according to another article published on Reuters, in countries like the UK, the margins of dairy farmers are really low. They can only make a couple pennies for making milk. And based on this foundation, if they have to pay extra for reducing the gas emissions, then they're probably not gonna make any profits. So who's gonna pay for those extra supplements? That's the problem. But anyway, the good news is a New Zealand company called Ruminant Biotech, which is a new venture. It's developing a methane inhibiting supplement, and it seems to be quite effective when they are testing on sheep, but it's still a long way to go for regulatory approval in New Zealand. And for the next question, which is what kind of solutions they have been doing for water pollution. So I'm gonna play an audio here, which is about how they mitigate water pollution.
Kind of the main thing we focus on is stopping it happening in the first place. And so we do have an environment program of identifying and fencing, naturally, all waterways on all our farms, which is in place. And we're now looking at how we can build the riparian zones back better in those areas to stop the nutrients leaching or surface runoff getting into the waterway in the first place. The other thing we do is nutrient budgets for all farms, because we want to minimise any nutrient leaching, and as well as doing a overseer report on every farm every year, which identifies the amount of nutrient loss. All farms have to do those when they're making system changes to assess the nutrient loading.
Yeah, so what he said was quite insightful, and so according to the research, the nutrients such as nitrogen are mainly from the fertilizers that's being discharged into the water. Things like nitrogen can lead to higher cancer rates among the population. And the other thing is bacteria such as E. coli from contaminated water can cause gastrointestinal diseases. And in New Zealand, each year around 30,000 people are being affected by such kind of disease. And according to a recent news article, many rivers in New Zealand are indicating excessive nutrients, and the amount of nitrogen and phosphorus is showing an upward trend. So things are quite challenging at the moment. And so for anyone who doesn't know nutrient budget is, so from the first journal that I found, ever since 2009, the Waikato Regional Council has been setting a limit for dairy farms discharging nitrogen into Lake Taupo in order to improve water quality. So I'm glad that PAMU is doing the same thing by minimizing nutrient leaching into the river system, which is quite beneficial for water conservation. And so the next question is what kind of sustainable measures they have been taking and what is their impact on the environment. So what he mentioned is how they keep the soil healthy, which is closely related to water conservation. Because obviously if we want to preserve the river system, we gotta ensure the soil conservation first. So according to the interview, they have been conducting soil fertility tests as well as a visual soil assessment to what kind of improvements to soil health can be made. He also mentioned using plantings such as trees to mitigate the erosion of soil. So what they've been doing can minimize nitrogen leaching and ensure their farms are organic. And based on a report published online, soil plays an important role within the environment system, such as water storage, filtering, carbon recycling and storage, and maintain biodiversity. In New Zealand, the tourism industry relies heavily on soil because of the magnificent landscape. But the fact is, we are losing 192 million tons of soil each year, and that is mainly due to human activities such as agricultural intensification, which stands for increased production per area of land, often achieved through increased inputs and higher stocking rates. So basically, some companies are just being too greedy. They don't think about the aftermath of using too much fertilizers or pesticides, or the impact of having too much cattle on the land. If we continue letting them to do so, our generations, our future generations, will be facing a breakdown of the environmental system. So, in conclusion, the New Zealand agricultural industry is still facing the challenge of being more sustainable. The government needs to work with the community, large corporations, raising the public awareness of those issues, as well as increasing regulatory pressure. And for PAMU, although they don't put 100% effort on sustainability, but I'm glad they're doing something for sustainability. According to the interview, as well as their report, they've been finding a lot of new technologies for sustainability, and they're working with New Zealand Agricultural Greenhouse Gas Research Center on the development of innovations that can reduce the environmental impact. So at the end of this podcast, I just want to say that if every organization, every single organization in New Zealand can contribute a little bit to sustainability, and altogether, the world is going to be a better place. And for every individuals or organizations on this planet Earth, just think about what you can do for the environment, even if it's just a tiny little thing. And thanks for whoever has been listening to this podcast. Bye, have a lovely day.
Interesting. What did you gain from it? What was your big takeaway?
From the podcast?
From the interview?
I think it's just how like organizations in New Zealand, they invest on like research and development of those sustainability measures that I didn't come up with. Like they're spending money on vaccines that can potentially reduce the methane emissions, and they're also spending money on like protecting the land and water. Yeah.
Okay. And what do you think the future is for sustainable agricultural practice in New Zealand?
It's actually quite I think it's more optimistic, like compared to kind of sad or whatever, the future, because we got all these technologies popping up that's able to solve some of the questions that we were not able to solve back in the days, like the carbon emissions and all that. But the thing is, who's gonna pay for those technologies? Is it going to be the government or those organizations or even those dairy farmers? That would be like a question, because companies, they have to make profits. If they no longer making any money, they're going to go like bankrupt. That would be the problem.
So if you were going to implement a solution now in the agricultural industry that you think would make the biggest difference, what would that be?
Kind of hard to answer. It's kind of like, how do you say, like, it's kind of like a chaotic situation.
Yeah.
You have to balance the interests of different stakeholders. And probably the government should take the initiative, because the government is like the, role model. If the government is doing something, then those organizations will probably take some measures on sustainability. So I think the role of government is really important.
Mm.
They should probably spend much money or time like investing on those new technologies and find out the most optimal solution that can balance between profits as well as the costs.
When you think about the future, where do you see yourself in it? Where do you see yourself being?
I don't think like I will really get involved, because I like my career probably got nothing to do with the dairy or farming industry, but I'm probably like more interested in like to see like what will be going on, like the procedure and all that, like just, you know, from those media and news article to see what's going on at the moment. And you know, us like the general public, we have to have the responsibility of
Chihao, do you think that having done this study in New Zealand, there is anything that you would take back to China? And then my follow-up question is, what can New Zealand learn from how sustainability is done in China?
I think in New Zealand, the government should be taking more responsibility. Even though the power of Western government is probably like relatively small compared to China, because I don't know if it's kind of sensitive to talk about, but we like our government is really powerful, and it does have drawbacks of having a powerful government, but when it comes to sustainability. With government like taking control, a lot of things that can be like implemented, like at the greatest capacity, like, because in New Zealand, like those big enterprises, they probably have more power, they can do lobbying, but in China, you have to listen to the government. The government tells you what to do. It's kind of like dictatorship, but when it comes to controlling like gas emissions, I believe it's quite like effective, because for like Western democracy, those big enterprises, they're playing like major roles. They have really big power, and sometimes the government is like dominated by those enterprises being controlled. So it's quite important to learn from China. Like the government, they dictate what kind of like what enterprises do. The enterprises, they don't have to follow every step, but they have to like follow the big picture. Yeah.
So I don't know what the process is for influencing the government, local, regional, or national in China, but if you could wave a magic wand and have some influence at any of those levels, from the study that you've now done, what would you take back to China? What would you like them to know?
Probably the Western developed economies, they have the awareness of sustainability and being like socially responsible. They teach people from the societal level, not just the governmental level, to raise the public awareness. But for China, as like businesses, they just care about like profits and how to like greenwashing or whatever to just follow the rules of the government. I think it's still quite like backward in China. We don't have the awareness of promoting sustainability measures.
Do you have a favorite definition of sustainability?
Well, it's not just benefiting the planet Earth or whatever. It's just like how do you balance between profits and those environmental issues, or as well as the societal issues, how you benefit the lower class income, those income groups, and how do you like balance the interests of different stakeholders? Yeah.
Balance is always a tricky one, isn't it? Because it's difficult to balance something when, if by balancing whether or not we should develop this, then if you say we're going to balance it and we're going to reduce the profit and we're going to dig up that mountain.
Yeah.
Because it's difficult to balance digging up a mountain. Or once a species is extinct, it's gone. How do you see balance working?
Yeah, it's quite a tricky one. Like, it's hard to ensure each interests of each party is like not being harmed or damaged. It's like how to ensure their interests are being like preserved.
So you're doing a master's. What are you going to do for your thesis?
I'm doing like supply chain.
What about supply chain?
It's like supply chain disruptions and the mitigation strategies.
I have some questions to end the show.
Yeah.
What is the biggest success you've had in the last couple of years?
Probably just completing my bachelor degree and now nearly completing my master's degree. I can't really think of any achievements that I accomplish.
That's all right. What's your superpower?
Superpower? I can like sense the emotions of people, maybe.
Do you consider yourself to be an activist?
Not really, but kind of.
Why kind of?
Compared to like my peers in China, I'm probably having the awareness of being proactive on those social issues, societal issues.
What motivates you? What gets you out of bed in the morning?
Just food. Just those yummy bacon and eggs.
What's the biggest challenge that you're looking forward to in the next year or so?
Just probably finding like the most appropriate job position.
What are you hoping for?
probably get a job relating to international trade. Yeah.
Cool. And lastly, do you have any advice for our listeners?
I think, like, if everybody's, like, even it's just, like, how do you say, like, if you just contribute, like, a little bit to the society or whatever, not just, like, sustainability point of view, if you just, you know, do a little bit for, like, the society, like, just donate, like, a little bit of money to those who suffer from, like, poverty or whatever, like, it's gonna make the planet Earth a better place.
Thank you for
Beautiful.
That.
It has been a real joy to teach you and to share the learning space with you over these last months. And I really enjoyed the way that you communicate your ideas and how much you think about things. You're a very thoughtful person. And I wish you very well in your future. And I'm thankful that you have made a commitment to making the world a more sustainable and happier place for everyone. Kia ora. And thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Thank you, Sam and Mawira. It's really a pleasure to talking to you, because I didn't talk much in class, but thankfully I spoke to two of your guys at the end of the semester. Yeah, it's a real pleasure. Yeah.
Cool. Thank you. We're going out to Winchester Cathedral. You've been listening to Blowing Bubbles, positive conversations with people in their bubbles, their safe spaces around the world. Brought to you by the Sustainable Lens team, which is brought to you by Otago Polytechnic. We broadcast on Otago Access Radio every Wednesday afternoon at 3 and streamed and podcast on oar.org.nz. You can find us on Facebook. We had a contribution today from Tahu McKenzie. I was joined today by Mawira Karatai, and with his episode of Coming Up For Air, we've been joined by Chihao Shen. I'm Samuel Mann. That was Blowing Bubbles. We hope you enjoyed the show. Matiwa.
Winchester Cathedral, you're bringing me down. You stood and you watched as my baby left home. You could have done something, but you didn't try. You didn't do nothing, you let her walk by. Now everyone knows just how much I needed that girl. She wouldn't have gone far away if only you'd started ringing your bell. Oh, Winchester Cathedral, you're bringing me down. You stood and you watched as my baby left home. Abel-de-el-del, Abel-de-el-del, Abel-de-el-del.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.